Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. This week, your hosts are Bella Waters, Admin and Development Director of the North Coast Environmental Center, and Larry Glass, Executive Director of the North Coast Environmental Center. The Eco News Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, Eco News. Don't forget you can find this show and other KHSU public affairs shows on the audio archives page at khsu.org. Today we'll be providing brief snippets of current news that pertain to various environmental topics, such as the car fire, green diamonds, HCP, and spotted owls, last chance grade update, cigarette ban bills, chemical giant Monsanto, and climate change. So first up, Larry, what do you have for us?
Well, we've got an ironic story here. I mean, the car fire, we've been hearing about the tragedy that surrounded it, all the people that lost their homes, animals that lost their lives, people, firefighters. It's been a big mess, but a sort of unintended, strange consequence is that the devastation that the fire has caused has actually been providing more water to the Trinity River.
Oh.
And that has happened because the dam that belongs to the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation has nearly doubled its flows into the Trinity River since the fire started. And they've been making the releases in order to address the emergency operations at the Trinity Power Plant, which has been affected by the fire. So the flows from Lewiston Dam to the Trinity Reservoir ramped up from what would be its normal 450 cubic feet per second to more than 1,200 at some points in time, but has remained steady at around 800 cubic feet per second since. So what this has created is higher flows, and it's flushed some of the algae and the bad water down the river and made it so some of the fish have been able to keep moving up the river. And the contrast is the Karuk Natural Resources Policy Advocate Craig Tucker noticed was that where the Trinity River hits the Klamath on up, where it's not being affected by these released flows, is still looking terrible and full of algae and in bad shape.
Mm-hmm.
And that all the problems of low flows and nutrients and the rest of that are all still prevalent in that stretch. But the stretch that's being affected by the higher flows is looking a lot better. An interesting example of the problems that we have on the river, but, you know, this was the one tiny little upside to
right.
The car fire.
You got to find those little nuggets.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as some of you have probably heard, our Congressman Jared Huffman has introduced the Northwest California Wilderness, Recreation, and Working Forest Act. And this newly unveiled legislation is to protect wild places and rivers and incorporated extensive community input from public listening sessions and stakeholder meetings.
And you recently went on a field trip with the congressman to show him what shaded fuel breaks actually look like, right? Could you tell us a little about that?
Right, which is an element that's in the bill, and since we're already talking about fire, it was kind of a spur-of-the-moment trip, but we managed to get Dan Dill, who is the Six Rivers Mad River District Ranger, and a representative from Trinity River Lumber, who's a member of the Trinity Collaborative, and myself, and Ryan Henson from Cal Wild. And we managed to, along with John Driscoll and Lindsay from Congressman's office in Eureka, and the congressman, to go out and take a look at this project that Six Rivers has planned with the Collaborative that is exactly the prescription that's included in his bill for treating roadsides within the greater South Fork Trinity Mad River restoration area. So we took him up what's called the 48 Road, and this project's called the First 48 because it's our first project and it's on the 48 Road. And we took him out there and showed him the way this project was marked. So in other words, he is looking at mostly the trees that were marked to leave on the site. So these projects, unlike a lot of thinning projects and other types of projects are not, they're not just some prescription of, well, trees over a certain diameter. These trees are individually selected, which ones are going to stay and which ones go. And the ones that stay are the ones that have the best chance of survival and producing the most shade for the long haul. So generally, the biggest, oldest, healthiest trees are the ones that are staying, and a lot of the younger trees are the ones going. That's not always the case. Sometimes we'll be on the site and the older tree has got the top broke off or got some other problem, and we're going to be actually leaving a younger full canopy tree. But usually it's the bigger, older trees that are staying.
Oh.
No hardwoods are taken, so all the hardwoods stay there. We've learned from trial and error that cutting the hardwoods down, all you get is this massive resprout after you cut them. And there's no need to cut them. They're very fire resilient anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we want them on the landscape. So anyways, it was a great opportunity for him to see this firsthand and for us to be able to show it to him and have a long discussion, and got lots of questions asked and answered during the trip. So it was a big success.
Oh, good. Well, thanks for taking the time and everyone else who did. And speaking of other forestry practices, up next we have Green Diamond's HCP.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah, so Green Diamond has gotten another deal that allows them to clear cut just at will. Once again, proving that it just seems the rules only apply to the little people, but the big guys get to do pretty much what they want. And so our friends at Epic, Tom Wheeler, and the folks over there are really going after them on this one, and more power to them.
Mm-hmm.
Green Diamond is currently operating under an older HCP for owls that was approved by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in 1992. Under that habitat conservation plan, Green Diamond set up a series of 40 reserves. There were basically no-cut areas set aside for the benefit of the owl. And those totaled 13,243 acres and ranged from approximately 60 acres to 2,000 acres each. The set-asides were designed to be large enough to support multiple pairs of owls that were spread out across Green Diamond's landscape or ownership. Under this new HCP, the set-asides disappear in favor of a dynamic reserve system.
Interesting.
Under the dynamic reserve system, the company will protect 44 owl nest sites, but just barely. The company will set aside 89 acres of forest around individual nest sites that are a minimum of 46 years old and 233 acres total within 0.5 miles of that nest, and that are 31 years old. Absent the HCP, Green Diamond would presumably have followed the take avoidance guideline, take meaning harassing or killing an owl, and they would have followed that guideline established by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for their timber harvest plans in the Redwood region. That take avoidance guideline preserved 500 total acres of habitat within 0.7 miles of a nest site. So in other words, they're going to do even more damage. And this is all while the owl populations continue to crash. And I always take the opportunity to point out to the listeners, this isn't just about the poor spotted owl. The spotted owl is an indicator species for all the old growth dependent species. So when their population is crashing, so is that an indication that all these other old growth dependent species, their populations are in stress and decline as well. So this habitat conservation plan has another sort of barely proven out theory that by killing barred owls and this will help the spotted owl to survive. Now, they've done some limited tests on this, and it did seem to have some benefit for the northern spotted owl to be able to reclaim some areas that had been driven out of by the barred owl, which is the barred owl is a much more aggressive bird and not so passive as a spotted owl, and it will eat anything. Mm-hmm. Whereas a spotted owl has a very narrow diet of mice and wood rats, and that's about what they eat. But the barred owl will just eat about anything. So, but as Green Diamond changes the landscape by just clear-cutting everything, they're enhancing the habitat that the barred owl can survive in and decreasing the amount of habitat that the spotted owl can survive in. So them killing barred owls is just, it's almost like window dressing. I mean, yeah, there may be a few more spotted owls that are able to nest and survive because there wasn't a barred owl there, but it doesn't really address the overall problem, which is continuing to clear-cut the landscape the way Green Diamond and Sierra Pacific and the rest of the big timber companies do in California is a failed way to manage the forest.
Hmm. Well, how about some good news, Larry?
Okay. Well, we do have a little bit. The City of Arcata's Environmental Services Department is excited to announce that the City of Arcata is expanding the Arcata Community Forest by about 20 more acres. The land was purchased from community members John and Claudia Lima. The land acquired, known as the Lima Parcel, is located on the east side of Humboldt State University along Jolly Giant Creek. It includes a quarter-mile segment of Jolly Giant Creek, in addition to a popular hiking trail.
That is good news.
Yeah, so the community is pretty grateful for John and Claudia Lima for working with the City of Arcata to ensure that this parcel remains as an open space redwood forest and managed as part of the Arcata Community Forest with public access. And former NEC Board Director and Mark Andre, now with the City of Arcata as their Environmental Services Director, is the one who made this announcement. So we're proud of you, Mark. Keep up the good work.
Mm-hmm. And it was funded by?
Oh, yes. The acquisition was made possible thanks to grants from the CAL FIRE Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund and California Resource Agency Environmental Enhancement and Mitigation Program.
Okay. And is there some potential good news from up north?
Yeah, our friends at EPIC, Tom Wheeler and the bunch, have let us know that they're monitoring the Last Chance Grade project, and we're all very interested in that. But EPIC has been sort of taking the lead on sending people up to the meetings and engaging with the agencies on this. And they've let us know that there's a couple of alternatives now that have cropped up, Alternative X and Alternative L. And unlike the other options that were being hyped so much that would take years and billions of dollars to acquire and take all kinds of old growth out, these are actually fairly benign and would not cost nearly as much. The rough estimate is $100 to $300 million as opposed to billions. Right. So that's good news. Also very good news that these alternatives, at least initially, appear to have the least environmental impacts compared to tunnels and,
right,
you know, the long way around. So there's been a lot of hype and fear raised about this highway. So I think part of the strategy was to get people freaked out enough that they would be willing to accept any price tag and any kind of environmental harm. Mm. But fortunately now with these other alternatives, there is clearly another way that we can move forward on that. So we'll continue reporting on that as this develops. But at least for now, that looks like there's some good news.
Okay, great.
And right now, as we're airing this program, also our friends at EPIC are participating in the Department of Fish and Wildlife's hearing in Fortuna. And the timber industry, we believe, is showing up in full force to oppose the listing of the Humboldt Martin. And so they're there representing the Humboldt Martin and all of us. And they want it listed as endangered under the California Endangered Species Act. So I tell you to go there, but as you're listening to this, this hearing is happening right now in Fortuna. But thanks to Tom and the crew at EPIC for staking that one out.
Right.
So in state news, last year during our coastal cleanup day, we reported picking up 24,602 cigarette butts. So I understand there's a couple of bills moving through the state Senate that would have some impact on that. Bella, you want to tell us about that?
That's right. Senate Bill 835 and Senate Bill 836, both respectively, are trying to ban cigarette butts. One is in parks and one is at state beaches. They have both cleared the appropriations on August 16th and are now advancing onto the Assembly for a House vote. So the bills would make it an infraction punishable by a fine of $25 to smoke a tobacco product or dispose of a cigar or a cigarette butt in a state park and or on a state coastal beach. The bill would also require the Department of Parks and Recreation to post signs in state parks or beaches to inform the public of the smoking prohibition. Eliminating smoking on beaches and parks will reduce the harmful cigarette butt litter in these special places. Additionally, the reduction of smoking will decrease the negative side effects of smoking that will in turn increase the recreational value for visitors. So we look forward to seeing how the assembly votes.
All right. Well, in other cancer news.
That's right.
This is a big one. Monsanto was ordered by a California jury to pay $290 million for failing to warn a dying groundskeeper that the weed killer that it makes, Roundup, might cause cancer. Now, just to be clear, the World Health Organization declared it a probable carcinogen, and the state of California under Proposition 65 has listed it as cancer-causing. So, anyways, the jurors last Friday unanimously found that Monsanto acted with malice and that its weed killers Roundup and the professional-grade version Ranger Pro contributed substantially to victim Dwayne Johnson's terminal illness. It also said that the company should have provided a label warning of the potential health hazard. So this was an 8-week trial, and you know they threw every lawyer that Monsanto could afford at this, and yet they still went down to defeat. This jury found Monsanto acted with malice and oppression because they knew what they were doing was wrong and doing it with reckless disregard for human life, said Robert Kennedy Jr., a member of Johnson's legal team. This should send a strong message to the boardroom of Monsanto.
Mm-hmm.
The company has denied any link between glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup, and cancer, and vowed to appeal the verdict and vigorously defend his product. So Johnson, in summary, he was using the product in his work for a Bay Area school district, and he sprayed large quantities from a 50-gallon drum that was attached to his truck, and during gusty winds, the product would blow back on him and cover his face, according to his attorneys. So word up to people out there using Roundup.
Well, and that it's also being used on school grounds, too.
Right, and this is
That's another issue that
we've reported on before. The group I represent, Trinity County Safe, along with other groups, has taken California Department of Food and Agriculture to court for spraying schools. Not only do they spray schools, but they do it and they don't tell anyone they did it. And then children and pets are playing on the grass that's just been sprayed and nobody even knows.
Right.
So very insidious.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then we've got another article about somebody losing in court. Our dear Trump.
So you're right, Bella. The Trump administration, while they continue their assault on all environmental regulations, every time we take them to court so far, we're setting them back.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, a lot of times we don't get injunctions to keep them from moving forward, but we are winning in court. And this is another example of... It turns out that unraveling Barack Obama's environmental agenda is a lot harder than it looks. Federal judges have ruled against the Trump administration 3 times in the last week, arguing that the administration short-circuited the regulatory process in its push to reserve policies on water protections, chemical plant safety operations, and the controversial Keystone XL pipeline. In each instance, the court either reinstated the existing rule or delayed the administration's proposal from taking effect. Last week, we did quite a bit of reporting on climate change and got a lot of feedback on that. People were glad to have a source talking about climate change, because I guess the mainstream media doesn't spend enough time actually drilling down on it. They may refer to it once in a while, but they don't really talk about it. So we've got a few stories here we wanted to share with you. Glacier National Park on fire is the first one. This summer felt like a global warming turning point, and now another milestone. Saturday was the hottest day in the history of Glacier National Park. It is the first recorded time reaching 100 degrees Fahrenheit. On the same day, lightning started three fires in the Montana Park, which has been partially evacuated and closed. So hot, dry winds, same story as what's going on in Northern California, happening in Montana. And if you've ever visited Glacier National Park, I haven't been there for a while, but when I did, kind of hard to imagine some of that on fire. But here we are. This is the new world. And of course, leave it to the Trump administration and Ryan Zinke, one of our beloved characters from the Trump administration. He has used climate-fueled wildfires to claim that it's the environmentalists' fault that the West is on fire. And this is a claim that he's made in the past, but he's ramped it up. And he visited the Mendocino complex, which is now the largest fire in California state history. And by the way, as of this report, is still only 75% contained, and the northeast arm of the fire is burning into Glynn County at this point, and they're really having a difficult time stopping it. It's burned much of the acres in Lake County. A lot of the Mendocino National Forest has burned now. But anyways, yes, Ryan Zinke on Breitbart News on August 11th, double down. We've been held hostage by these environmental terrorist groups, he calls them, that have not allowed public access and refused to allow timber harvest. The result of these catastrophic fires that are causing death. So that's the kind of rhetoric that Ryan Zinke is coming forward with. Pretty pathetic. All right, and then we've got some other climate things from the National Geographic. They have new data from two Arctic sites that suggest some surface layers are no longer freezing. If that continues, gases from the permafrost will be released, which will then only just accelerate climate change. Now, remember, at the same time, Trump is trying to roll back any of the clean air and emission standards that were passed in the last half century. He's rolling everything back. So every winter across the Arctic, the top few inches or feet of the soil and rich plant matter freeze up before thawing again in the summer. Beneath this active layer of ground, extending hundreds of feet deeper, sits continually frozen earth called the permafrost, which in places has stayed frozen for a millennia. But in a region where the temperatures can dip to 40 degrees below zero Fahrenheit, unusually high snowfall this year worked like a blanket, trapping heat on the ground. To the uneducated, they're going, well, wait, there's more snowfall. But when it's warmer up at the poles, it actually snows more because the warmer air can hold more moisture. So then when it precipitates as snow. So rather than there just being little precipitation and just freezing, sub-freezing cold air over the surface, there's this blanket of snow. And anybody who's ever been trapped in the mountains knows that you want to dig a cave in the snow and get out of the wind, because at least it's just 32 in the cave instead of 40 below outside.
Right.
So that's how that all works. So that's certainly some concerning news that could potentially have some real issues for us to deal with in the future, which, you know, it could accelerate. Some scientists are concerned that we may be seeing a return to hothouse Earth, which is our next story. A report predicting spiraling global temperatures has been downloaded 270,000 times in just the last few days because it's gotten people's attention on the internet. The scorching temperatures and forest fires of this summer's heat wave have finally stirred the world to face the onrushing threat of global warming. Following an unprecedented 270,000 downloads of his study, Hans Joachim Schnellhuber said he had not seen such a surge in interest since 2007, the year the Nobel Prize was awarded to Al Gore and the Intergovernment Panel on Climate Change. I think in the future, people will look back on 2018 as the year when the climate reality finally hit people, said the veteran scientist. This is the moment when people start to realize that global warming is not a problem for future generations, but is a problem for us now. The heat wave has dominated headlines across the Northern Hemisphere this summer. The new temperature records have been set in Africa, cities in Australia, Taiwan, Georgia, the west coast of the U.S. Heat stroke or forest fires have killed 119 in Japan, 29 in South Korea, 91 in Greece, and 9 in California. And I think there's even been more. There's been freak blazes in Lapland and elsewhere in the Arctic Circle, where holidaymakers and locals alike have sweltered in unusually hot weather in southern Europe. Coming amid this climate chaos, the hothouse paper by Schnellhuber and his co-authors struck a chord with the public by spelling out a huge and growing risk that emissions are pushing the planet's climate off the path it's been on for 2.5 million years. Schnellhuber said the paper release had accidentally been delayed, but the timing proved serendipitous. It came out at a time when temperatures in Germany reached 38 degrees Celsius, so people could personally experience the heat wave. But this is just the beginning. And another climate change piece, which will be our last one, is that in addition to the heat and the global warming, our dependence on nitrogen for fertilizer, it's included in most of our chemical fertilizers that are used, getting in the water is also threatening life and life support systems around the world at the same time that the heat is making it almost uninhabitable for these. So the Stockholm Resilience Center, an organization that examines the largest threats to natural life support system, considers the overuse of nitrogen a more extreme risk to life on Earth than even climate change, this new paper says.
Wow.
So we've got a lot of work to do in the environmental movement to try and educate the public to realize before it's too late that we're right on the precipice here. We may be reaching a point where we can't turn back. And then this is not about your kids, Tom. This is about now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thanks for all that
cheery news.
Oh, if you say so. Yes, the NEC has our upcoming Summer SLU Social. You can purchase tickets today, Thursday, August 23rd, until about 5 o'clock. And after that, tickets will be purchased at the door on Sunday. The event is from 3 to 7, and you can find more information on our website at www.yournec.org. This has been the Eco News Report with Bella Waters and Larry Glass, and we've been your hosts for the past half hour. You can find more information about the issues we've discussed on the NEC website, www.yournec.org. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the Public Affairs page on the KHSU website at khsu.org, where these programs are archived for 2 weeks after they air. Previous shows are posted on the North Coast Environmental website. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call KHSU's listener comment line at 826-6089. The Eco News Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred McLaughlin for engineering. Join us again for the next Eco News Report.